we're going to do the panel about creating sex spaces. We know you've all already done that in various contexts throughout your lives, so we don't mean to supersede anything that you've already done or learned yourselves. We do want to talk about doing it in groups. And I am so delighted to have my panelists with me, Robert and Zach, Kitten and Polly. Your Highness, I don't even have any clue what he might say, which makes it so exciting.
Yeah.
Do you wanna start by doing an intro thing yourself, Yannis, or should I start with the other intro?
I mean, I want everyone to introduce themselves and their entity just so that
they do it in their own words. So.
Does it work? Does it work?
Yeah, so, my name is Johannes. I'm an artist and I teach at university art. We call it nowadays art. Yeah. And I'm one of the organizers of Ars Electronica because I'm part of Memchrome. We're an art and tech collective and we do various interesting endeavors, among them Ars Electronica. And today I would like to talk a little bit about one of our sex spaces we'll create like in an hour down there, because we will bury people alive in a coffin with a coffin cam inside, which has a spooky green like night vision view and it turns your eyes into snake eyes. And I guess you hopefully don't mind because you will have like eruptive sex in the coffin with your significant other. So let's see what will happen down there, and I can talk a little bit about that, but there many, many other things I can talk about.
Hey, Polly, do you wanna go next?
Sure.
Hi.
I'm Polly. I founded a sex-positive community space in a mission called Mission Control. We run a bunch of different events in the space. One of the most well-known ones that we created was Kinky Salon, which has been going for about 8 years now. Mission Control itself has been around for nearly 10, and we've had a bunch of other stuff happening in the space too, but King Salon is our main event.
My name is Kitten Kelfi. Around 9 years ago, I started this sex-positive community group for queer men called Comfort and Joy. And we didn't start out as a sex space. We started out as like a community center that was sex-positive. We thought, well, what if we had an environment where you didn't get in trouble for touching someone, you didn't get in trouble for being affectionate, but you still managed to like have interesting art and culture and things going on. And then we just ran with it and saw what happened. And now it's 9 years later.
Hi, I'm Zach, and I spent a lot of my early 20s in a variety of different group sex environments, like bathhouses and all these things that were commercially organized, and even worked for people who were throwing them, and always found them to be lacking a sort of a community vibe, that there was a sort of, I'm not fucking, and I'm going to stand against the wall, sterility to a lot of environments, and after meeting the Radical Fairies and participating in their central up in Wolf Creek, Oregon, I started working on a variety of sex spaces that were informed by magical ritual, and specifically this concept around sex magic. I still enjoy commercial sex spaces, and I think that there's a line that I haven't fully figured out between a sex space that's like known and commercial and like a standard run-of-the-mill sex space and something that is like magically infused or magically informed, and I've had varying degrees of success with blending them.
My name's Robert, and I've been doing this for 26 years, establishing sex spaces. In 1984, our lovely Senator Dianne Feinstein shut San Francisco down. There was no sex clubs available. We went underground with the San Francisco Jacks. And from there, we formed the Coalition for Healthy Sex at 890 Folsom Street and opened up Blow Buddies, Eros, The Trough, of which Carol is an honorary member. And Queen of Heaven, and Jack and Jill parties, and the Center for Sex and Culture and Time. We just accrued so much stuff that people left behind. Their old smut, their old clothes, that sort of stuff, that we just had a whole archive going up. I'd like to compliment this place. I don't know what your budget is. We exist on $80,000 to $100,000 a year, and this is a really nice space. Thanks for having us in here tonight. I have an associate fellow in the American Academy of Clinical Sexology. I've got a doctorate in human sexuality. I know more about adult film posters than probably any other five people in the nation. And that $5 gets you a cup of blue bottle. I have been teaching sex since 1973, and I was an asex sex educator, that sort of stuff. But I do this for sort of a living for the longest time, and I've been fighting for the right for people to have sex in public since 1984, when they shut down the clubs. I'm associated with the Blow Buddies, clubs like that, and most commonly recently with the San Francisco Jacks since about 1980 or thereabouts. And welcome, everybody.
And I want to acknowledge that I had invited in some of the PR that went out. I had listed that Shel Frey would be with us, who was one of the founders of Barry and Shell's, the old school Scream Club in Oakland, which still exists. And I'm very sorry to say that she wasn't able to make it. And so I'm not Shel, sorry. But I was at Barry and Shell's a couple of times. So if it comes to, you know, looking way back in the Wayback Machine, I can talk about swinging circa 1987, if you would like me to do that, and possibly swinging circuit today, but Polly can probably handle that better because she hosts the wonderful Club Kiss over at Mission Control. So I want to say that we've got a variety of orientations and genders here. I actually reached out to make a bigger panel that was more inclusive, and it's kind of thank goodness that not all 12 people that I invited came to be on the panel, because then nobody would get buried in time. And I'm Carol Queen, in case that was not clear to anyone. All right. If anybody has a piece of paper that they want to put on the back table to get an email list for anybody who's interested in their email being shared with these entities, please go ahead and somebody do that. And we'll, yes, of course we're entities. Of course we are. We don't necessarily have tentacles, but we're entities. And some of us may have tentacles. And Annalie can tell, I think, probably from where she's standing, which one of us might. Right, okay, good. That's something I look forward to. And if people are intrigued by the stuff that we talk about here and might want to be in on communicating with our groups and stuff, please let us know that. I want to start by asking a question that I don't think any of you delved too far into, so I don't think this is too redundant. What got you interested in not just one or two people sex, but community-based or group sex? What was the intriguing thing about that to make a public sex space that wasn't the back of somebody's car, somebody's bedroom, a hallway at a party, or something else? Anybody could go first.
So when I was actually very young, I think I must have been about 12 at the time, I had a conversation, I remember very vividly having a conversation with a friend of mine about how culture had changed so much, and that in Victorian times it was incredibly shocking to be seen, like even to be kissed on the cheek by someone, and that how much culture had shifted, and that maybe within our lifetimes people would be just having sex at parties, just quite naturally. And I remember very vividly thinking that when I was quite young, thinking, yeah, that would be cool. It would be like, if it was just normal for people to have sex, that would be cool. And then my first experience of a sex-positive space, I was about way too young. I was about 15 years old, and I went to this fetish club in London called Scream Fetish, and it was just like a pub from the outside, just like a regular English pub, and you went in and kind of sat down, and all these people kept asking us, hey, do you want to go downstairs? Do you want to go downstairs? And we were like, no, you're okay, actually. This is like me and my 15-year-old school friend, and eventually we were like, should we go and look at what's happening downstairs? And we went and looked, and it was a dungeon, full-on BDSM dungeon, and we were thinking, oh, that's shocking, oh, wow, oh, yeah, let's go, let's leave, oh, I don't know, that was a bit much. And later on in the week, we were like, so what did you think about that? Yeah, it's kind of weird, actually. Did you know that's how it's going? Oh, let's go next week. And so we started going regularly to this fetish club, and it just completely transformed my life, and the experience of being around sex-positive sexual environment just really opened me up as a young teenager and influenced everything about, you know, my life, and my passion has been for building sex-positive community ever since then.
Thank you, Ben.
I guess my first one was, I was also very young, it was the 90s, and orgies were sort of like being discussed. I don't know, I think Madonna did that or something, but all of a sudden my like 10th grade friends decided that we were going to get a kiss on orgy for Valentine's Day, but that wasn't really cool, and that no one was allowed to wear a shirt, boy or girl, and that everyone had to have bisexual kisses, no matter what, there was going to be a lights out party, and then it kind of, okay, I mean, it was like, as far as like a high school party goes, but like the maybe like 8 of us, and I thought it was a really good plan to slip off, and it was like my first group sex experience. And then after that, I was already in S&M, like in the morning check, S&M is hot, and for whatever reason, they usually have S&M clubs there available before bars are available, so I saw like group sex in the S&M environment before I was like, you're seeing a gay blind sock, a blow job in the corner, or whatever.
It was 1970 or thereabouts, and I was just a couple blocks away from here, and I was 16 years old, that's exact, so yes, I'm 56. And these two huge men in black leather were walking by, and I grew up in a small town outside of the Bay Area here, and huge men in black leather were always bankers, and so I sort of ducked into a doorway and lit a cigarette and kept my head down because I didn't really want them to notice me. And as I walked by, one of them said to the other one, I need to take this lady and put it in the fork and hold it in flame and just hurt real slow, the skin slips right off, and I thought, oh, I'm home. And I found the ambush right down the street here, and the ambush was all had of like every bar, and every bar within a mile of this place had a back room, and if they weren't just like the big or the whatever main club you could walk into and have sex with whoever you wanted to, it was just sort of an open field. So when I saw that guy in 84, that part of it, not the rest of it, many more things were passing, but that part of it passed. As a sex educator, I realized our opportunity had to come back. So we sat down with a group of people and rationally planned clubs. It was the personal and the political. And those models that Madonna had in the back of her orgy, I know some of them because they used to come to our orgies. That's how they got recruited.
I have a double-pronged thing. Half of it's theory and half of it's like my personal experience. I was always really interested in how like oppressive totalitarian regimes are usually anti-sex, and there's some kind of like connection between controlling people's private lives and controlling public space and controlling government and other things, and I'm a little unclear on exactly how that works, but I just got really annoyed with it, that there's this arbitrary thing where if I talk to you like this, it's okay, but if I get a little bit too friendly, then it's being faggy and that's wrong, and if I get even, you know, it seemed always very arbitrary to me, like why put a stop on love somewhere. And the other half of it is that I'm very ADD, and when I go in a bar, I'm like, oh wow, great, all these people, let's go talk to all of them. And I can't really be friendly. Oh no, I'm in trouble again, I've been too friendly. And then I had about other people that I liked to go do things, and I was like, well, you don't have to deal with people that aren't that way. And I would go out with a friend, and like we would just make flyers for like literally his apartment, and then we would just like invite people we liked, and we'd meet us at 11:30, and we'd go out a little earlier, and then from like 11 to whenever, we'd have a like 10 or 15 person thing. And that was before Comfort and Joy. And then Comfort and Joy turned into just like, oh, it's a dance party, but when you want to leave the dance party and go and maybe take a date to the back room and like get to know them better, it's a lot less commitment than going across town to who knows where and, you know, what's going to happen in 3 hours when you're all done, or you're going to find out then it could be a very bad scene. That's a lot less risk to take in the next room to go and, like, you know, chuck up the goods for 5 minutes and then make your decisions. And it just seemed a lot more convenient. I mean, why not have convenience in your life? So, I don't know.
I just really just wanted to also finish up with that. Some of my first parties were like basically manufactured post-bar orgies, like, oh, we're all going back to my house, this is my phone number, no, you, and not you. And there would be men of Robert's age who were like, you know, we didn't used to have to manufacture this crap. I was like right when the parties and ambition hit, I like was 21 in 2000, in 1999, so it was like people were just settling back into like a sex-positive culture, and all of the guys who were like 45 were like, kid, we would not use like a flyer for an after-bar orgy.
The bar was the orgy.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't have to take all this to your house. You could have already done this.
You just had to rip the back out of your pants. Lean over the bar.
My experience has always been that that many guys can stand up. And some women can stand up, but some women like to lie down. And some guys like to lie down. So the next thing I want to ask about is, when you get to the place where you're going, whether it's an after-bar flyer orgy or you've just set something up, what are the elements of space that make it friendly for more than a couple of people to go and chat there? What are the physical elements that you have found important of sex space?
Depends on the crowd. Some of the things we discovered through study over the years is that somewhere in a mixed crowd, 8 square feet is the personal space that people tend to use. So at 6 square feet, people start saying it's a bit too crowded for a mixed gender crowd. But at 6 square feet for an all-male crowd, it's like, oh, that's where things are kind of getting interesting. We can just lube each other and slide through the crowd. So there's a gender thing. There's also clothing, is that most people, and I won't say all everybody, but most people somewhere around 76 to 78 degrees when they hit a space, they feel much more encouraged to remove their clothes because they're hot. So it's actually a design element architecturally.
And if they're menopausal, it'll happen sooner.
We discovered early on to get people to lay down, if you swag fabric low in the room, they have to do this. They have to go, what's going on there? So allowing people the freedom to crawl around instead of the freedom to stand around, making spaces where people can be comfortable for laying down if it's mixed gender, if it's all women. Kara started a club called Club Cream, that the space was padded so people could lay down, or fresh cloth, that's what they're looking for. The trough, well, that's a totally different thing, but it depends on what your niche is. But for just general crowds, we look for some of those things. The mystery, the exclusivity, the design for what the crowd is supposed to be, depending upon where you want to go, is all important. Having a door person who is the person that I find, the crowd for me will always look like the person you have at the front door. If you have a bear at the front door, bears are going to the place. So having that kind of structure is very helpful to help design who comes in. And those are things we just picked up. Light, a 5-watt bulb is enough for this room. It really is. You just have to be here for 20 minutes to get adapted to it. We also came up with concepts like there was always a performance. We'd have Fat Chance Butter dancing. We'd have the Hail Marys. We had various assembly bands and music in. There's always some kind of performative aspect. And then the aspect of the mysteries. We had to bring in a mystery of some sort, and we chose paganism for a long time to bring people together. I think many people will say this, if you put enough people in the room and they know it's a sex space, there'll be a moment when people aren't, and then there'll be a moment when people are. So we formed a group of people to do that for them. We call them spark plugs or facilitators, and they later became the safer sex sluts. And that job was, when there's enough people in the room and they're not having sex, somebody starts having sex. And the moment somebody starts having sex, everybody else starts feeling permission to do that. So I think that's the rough for me how to get it done.
Right, and Robert was just describing mostly a multi-gender space, I think. Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. So I have some experience doing pan-gender sex parties, and they definitely have completely different rules than throwing an all-male sex party. And lighting was the number one thing that we learned, was that, like, once it got to a level of too much darkness, all the women would leave, and all the men would play. And when they left the lights up too high, the women would be in piles thinking, and the men would be standing in the kitchen. My number one advice, if you want to have there's two things. If you want to make a gay men's orgy, is one, get them the clothes at the front door as part of the gate. Don't give them the option of standing in the clothes. Yeah. Even if they made a human orgy, they were standing in the damn clothes for hours. Yes, with a hold on, if you're even nervous and money, and women are not acting weird. And the second thing is, if you're doing it in your house, take every light bulb out of the kitchen for real. Like, unscrew it and remove it. Because the people can turn on the light, and as soon as the light goes on, they will all stand in the kitchen forever.
Or you can replace it with a red light.
Especially your kitchen, any place that people normally come to in your house during a regular party, and it gets like to the social space, you have to make sure that that's not tempting for them. Oh, and vacuum first.
I just want to say that red light is awesome. It's so much better than white light. You can't see any blemishes, no pimples, because you can't see red. You can't see purple either, so you can't see bags under people's eyes. Everybody looks prettier, no pimples. We've experimented with a couple of different things, and someone mentioned earlier that it matters a lot what the crowd is, and I see a bigger division between shy people who are inhibited versus people who are really used to being in all kinds of environments and don't really care what happens. And we've tried things where it's like, oh, you can build up this energy, you can go and start at the dance floor and end up in the orgy room, and there's like three rooms in between that kind of like get sexier and sexier. Or it's like at our tents and boarding room, we used to try to make alcoves for people so you could have privacy. And then this past year, we didn't really get to that. There was one big open circus tent, and people, I guess, were used to going there, and it didn't really matter at all. But our group does a party like maybe four times a year at Polly's Face, and it's kind of like the conservative coming out party, because all of like the 20-somethings I haven't been to an environment like that before are nervous, and we kind of like that they get to have an environment that's not Blow Buddies yet. I feel really comfortable in a Blow Buddies, but a lot of people don't. But they can go and do the dance floor thing, and they get nervous and giggle, and I see it as like, oh, well, we're letting them explore, and blah, blah, blah. But then other things are more straight up, like, when we're there.
So I think for me, one of the most important things about the space that I run, and I run parties for pansexual parties, I run heterosexual parties, and I run women-only parties. So all three of those I've had experience with. And I think for me, the most important thing is having a social space. And maybe that's a chick thing, I don't know, but the social space to me is an essential part of the mix, because it gives people an opportunity to come and just experience what it is to be in a sex-positive space without feeling any pressure to actually have sex. When you're kind of standing at the side of the room, there's an orgy happening, and that's the only thing, you're like, oh my god, like, I either have to get down right now, or I'm feeling awkward, and I'm awkward either way. Like, having a bar or just a dance floor gives you more opportunity to kind of get to know people without the pressure. I've heard people say many times that they can come to Mission Control and have a great night just sitting at the bar and, you know, just hanging out, and they never have to have sex. And that's not really a priority, but just being in a sex-positive environment is what really excites them. And as for, you know, creating the space, it's something that we've been putting a lot of thought into recently, because we've actually been branching out and doing Kinky Salon in other cities. And rather than actually going there and doing them ourselves, we've been training people and sending them off with training of, like, what is the formula of how you create a safe, sex-positive space. And for us, you know, with Kinky Salon specifically, the formula is a costume party. Costumes are a really great way of sorting the wheat from the chaff. Everybody has to make a fucking effort, and if you don't make an effort, then you don't get in the door. And because people have made an effort, they're like, I've made an effort. By the time they've arrived, there's nobody arriving going, yeah, what the fuck is this thing? Like, I don't even care. Everyone's there, and they're all invested already. It stops people from wandering in off the street who you don't know, and it's just a really great way of having an icebreaker, because you can be like, oh my god, look at your costume, you look awesome. So costumes is a really good one to start off with. We also have what we call the PAL system. The PAL system means that you have to arrive with somebody. It's kind of like a buddy system. So you have to arrive with somebody. They're not necessarily somebody that you're playing with. So you, like, two single straight guys can come together. But they just have to keep an eye on each other. And you are responsible for your pal's behavior. And that means that rather than having to police the space, like a bunch of people having to keep an eye on everyone, instead everyone is keeping an eye on one person. And if anybody does anything, you know, that's against our rules, then not only they will be held accountable, but also their pal will be held accountable. And we've found that this really works for creating a safe environment. And we've been through all kinds of different permutations over the years of how to create safe space. We've had it just be open. We've had what we call a single guy license, where we have to, like, but that's just really, like, discrimination, and I never liked that. But ultimately, I hate to say it, but it was the single guys that were causing the problems in the play spaces more than anybody else, so it was something that we felt we had to control. But the power system really, really, really helps that. Another thing is having an environment where there's multiple spaces, you know, is really important. And having it be clean, like you say, vacuum. I always say I want to be in a space where I feel like I can walk around barefoot. I think that's really important for a play party. Having walk-around hosts, having people who are available with little host badges, so that just in case anything happens or goes wrong, people who are trained, people who know what to do, so if you see a couple arguing, or if you see some tension going on, that we have people who can interject and say, hey, you know, do you want to come out of the play space and maybe talk about this? And this really helps, because you'd be surprised that a lot of people start have not negotiated ahead of time what's okay when they arrive. And so a lot of people are mid-negotiation when it's all charged and something goes wrong, and it can cause a lot of tension. So being able to disperse that, and I think it's interesting too, you know, what you're saying earlier about having different needs for different kinds of groups. Like, definitely, there's definitely a big difference between having a space where there are women and having a space where there are no women. Because I think that women, you know, in our culture are really sexualized. So, like, wherever we go, we're always, you know, having wolf whistles and commentary as we're walking down the street. And I think it's something that men aren't really subjected to in the same way that women are. So women kind of go into a space, and in order to feel safe, they really need to have these rules in place where, like, no aggressive cruising, like, no touching without asking, like, you know, all of these things that might not be necessary in a modern space are necessary to create that safety when there are women around. Although, you know, when you're in a women-only space, again, it's different, because when the men are taken out of the agenda, it's a really different environment where women just seem to be much more welcoming to each other in a way that's like, they're not concerned about the boyfriend who's in the corner like, oh, this is my boyfriend. It's like, it's just a woman. Like, it always ends up being much more of a pile when it's a women-only party. Much less kind of like segregated, much more just like, woo, a pile of ladies. So I'll leave it on that.
Okay. I'd like to speak on the voice of my group and our group. So I'm a new artist, and I have to say, and I don't even count the coffin down there as a sex space. So we never ever went out there and said we want to create a sex space. But we are, like, for like almost 2 decades now, let's call it, we're trying to fist the social norms. And we're trying to set up small experiments and setups and interesting constellations. And I have quite a fair amount of stuff to tell about these crazy social experiments and what they then did. I mean, for example, we're doing for a long, long, long time now a festival in Vienna, Austria. It's about cocktail robotics. It's about people who build machines who make cocktails. And you would not believe what the combination of robots and cocktails does to 500 people. And what then suddenly happens in the bathroom. And you would not expect it there. And there's a machine there too. So that's quite interesting. I would say, and that's really interesting for me and for our group, is there's this wonderful term by Hakim Bey called the temporary autonomous zones. Mm-hmm. So it's something that just like emerges. It's something there. And I like that when something happens out of nothing. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's not out of nothing, but sometimes you have to give it a little kick. But out of like a pretty normal, probably totally heteronormative situation, something interesting emerges out of there. And we never, for example, ever planned to have sex parties or something at Ars Electronica. We were primarily saying, hey, we'll do a conference about sex and technology. But the last 4 years, I've seen a couple of things and also kind of participated. I would have not imagined that, and that's pretty good. And it happened, for example, at the local hackerspace at Noisebridge. I mean, you would not imagine, I will not tell, because they don't like me to talk about it. But it happened, and it was a very beautiful temporary autonomous zone, I have to add.
This makes me want to ask Robert about the temporary autonomous zone of the Folsom Street Fair when we had the sex machine there, and also to ask you guys to talk a little bit more about the Playa, which is, of course, a huge temporary autonomous zone with little ones within it.
Right. Well, just a little bit before we get to Folsom, we have given hundreds of parties internationally. Our events are copied internationally. We have one going in Copenhagen, dare I say internationally. We run exotic Portland, London, various countries. We have a free structure that you can just take. It's called the Masturbate-a-thon. It's a safer sex outreach. And then this year we've reached something like 30 million people with it.
Requires no social skills.
Yeah, we have been reviled by Rush Limbaugh and everybody else about this stuff. So what happened many years ago to gel us together was we were having the parties, a bunch of men standing around 8, 9, and Folsom, we were all playing with each other. There was this boombox playing, and the lieutenant from the police department came in and took us all on the sidewalk naked, got us, send us in one at a time to get our clothes, got our IDs, and wrote down all our names and buses and shut the party down. So to start the sex parties, we started working with the Coalition for Healthy Sex. We helped found it. And we started working with the police department, the fire department, and the health department, because we didn't want to run a blind pig. We don't want to be accused of you running a bar, we're going to bust you for that, or you're running a cabaret, you're going to bust you for that. It's just stuff that they're not going to bust you for, and the fire department was key to it. They don't want to find anybody involved in a fire. So once we got them on our side, they left us all alone. So if you're going to open up a space, it's best to have your attorney contact the local things. But the autonomous ones were fun because we used to squat warehouses. We'd break into places that weren't being used and just, you know, tell everybody, come to this location at this time and have parties. We took it to the extreme in Folsom about 8 years ago when we brought in the fucking machine and we were just having sex in public. Folsom told us that we couldn't do that anymore. They said no more sex because BD...
Wasn't there a play tent
before? Yes.
No, we offered to run the play tent, but we haven't even picked up on it yet. The fucking machine went international very quickly online. People were paying a lot of attention to it because, oh my God, there's somebody being fucked in public on Folsom Street in a booth for a nonprofit to raise money. We raise about $80,000 to $100,000 a year doing sex with our nonprofit at one level or another, and it's an all-volunteer organization. Nobody gets paid. There's not a commercial effect. It's about getting the information out for free as much as we can. And this year we plan to go live online 100%. So if you see a lecture, you can just tune into it online and watch it for free.
I like it when super liberal organizations tell you what you should not do.
I know. It's like, no, if you're not going to pay us to do it, and you're going to revile us, we'll just shove it down your throat for free, and to heck with you. So, yeah.
Okay.
Other question?
Playa.
Playa.
Well, I'm interested in whether or not you see differences from the urbanized environment that you might be able to create a space in here in San Francisco or elsewhere versus when people come to gather together into sort of a new village, a new society for a period of time. Do you see differences out there that are notable to you, or is it mainly just the sand?
Well, you know what tourists are. They come here for Folsom and they want an experience. Like, I've traveled all the way here so I can have an experience. And everyone have an experience. And they're all, like, geared up for it and excited. People do the same thing out there, for sure. And they know they're self-selected. They want to go out there and live their radical new dream of who they could be as people and stuff like that. And so you already have the audience there. And I know it is the thing about having someone at the door and all that, but we came out of doing the private invitations. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm just going to give this to you so these other people don't notice. And then, like, we self-select the four people out of the room that we want to take later. And we just kept on going with that. Mm-hmm. And we were afraid that we were going to get in trouble with the building people. I was like, oh, well, why don't we just be subtle about that and make it not obvious.
Because you're not, like, socialist or something?
I wasn't sure. I knew they had Sufi lube, but I didn't know how much I didn't want to, like, have to talk to the sheriff and, you know. So our group tended to be, like, people who already knew that we kind of shared a culture, and then we'd give, like, each person 20 flyers. Invite your 20 favorite people that you go out and meet, and then only those people would come back, and it wouldn't be a generally advertised thing. And so then the people that were showing up were people that were already been screened and invited, but we had enough invitations out that it would work, and we tried to have strong branding too, so people knew what they're coming back for.
Which is actually, in a way, a variant of what Polly was talking about, the PAL system, and I think that we've done at Queen Pattern as well, of having individuals sort of responsible for one another. You want to go ahead, Rose, and then I've got one more question for people, and then let's see if others have questions too. Go ahead.
This is
flyer
related.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
In terms of getting in trouble with the org about sex parties or sex spaces, at least this year, there was a little dome set up with rooms off it called All You Need Is Love, and it was one of the first pages of the Who, What, Where, and the description of it was, you know, are you camping with people where it's not cool for you to have sex with your partner? Or do you have some situation where you can't have sex in your own space? Come here, and it's safe and it's cool. And it was lovely. It was a fully air-conditioned space, as you were talking about, it was carpeted, people had to leave their plyo dusted stuff, and then there were, curtains so that, plyo dust doesn't come in, and there were different rooms and spaces so that people could be more or less exposed. And
it turns out being an org is very sex positive.
It was
spend a lot of time trying to defend camps like that from scrutiny from unfriendly authorities. They don't group them together too much. They put this at more sexual camps, not mass mod, but like back in harder to find areas, so people that want to find it can find it. But mom and her two kids, ages 4 and 6, aren't going to wander in by accident. So I was afraid of offending them for a while, but they're not offended by that at all. They want it to be healthy. They appreciate like safer sex practices. We do workshops during the day that relate to things. Like the idea is that we create a space where people can have freedom, and then do workshops to help them gain tools to help them navigate that space intelligently. And so they're like, "Oh, you're being wholesome, how wonderful! Clap, clap, clap! Why don't we give you even bigger lot next year?" It's been very nice.
Yeah, it was a lovely space this year. And I just wanted to comment on that this year.
And that actually leads me to my sort of penultimate question, which is, it is about the tools, and the tools could be a lot of different things. At least two of the entities we're talking about here have used ritual or spiritual space as tools. Some of us have used safer sex practice and expectation as tools. There are lots of different ones. Do you all want to talk about some of the sort of the interpersonal and emotional technologies that make a difference for people, particularly to the shy ones who really want to be in that mix but don't quite know how to get there without the structure that you create? Some of you have touched on those things already, but do you want to say something about those things?
Paul was saying that the hosts matters a lot. I used to always try to line up massage therapists to be like, okay, your job is to hang out in the beginning and touch people and be like, oh, look, tense, let me help you with your shoulder, blah, blah, blah. And I knew, like, I'd be a very friendly host and I'd be like, oh, look, there's 10 people I invited over here. I'm going to greet them and try to get things a little started that way. And I'd be a little bit more physically friendly than other people and maybe, like, take off the top layer of clothing and, oh, you're here, you don't need that off. And then it kickstarts things. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that there are lots of tools happening even behind the scenes that the people who come don't even really know why, when they walk up those stairs and come into Mission Control, they feel so at home. And if I had a dollar for every person who said to me, oh my God, I've been wanting to come here for years, I've heard about it so many years ago, but I was always scared, and now I'm here, I feel so at home. This just all feels so natural. And they're like, how do you guys do that? It's just some kind of magic. No, it's not magic. Well, it's partly magic, but it's a combination of tools and factors that gives people that feeling of feeling at home. And I think that for me, one of the biggest ones is when you're arriving and having that good moment when you arrive. Like, that's one of the most important things that you can do, is when someone comes up the stairs or in through the door, whatever, I'm always saying up the stairs because that's why it's a Mission Control, but that they feel welcome and that they feel safe. And so we always have a greeter at the top of the stairs. So it's not just about coming in and paying your money and being able to just come straight in like, woo, it's a party, I'm drunk, I'm going to a bar, I'm going to come into your parties, woo! Like so many people do. Like, at Mission Control, you slow down, because at the bottom gate, you slow down because you're asked, what are you here for? And people are like, the party? Which party? Drinking someone? Okay, welcome, come on. That slows them down once. And then we have the second gate, which is the person who is taking your name and checking off on the list. And then we have the third greeter, which is somebody who's actually welcoming you and actually giving you a little bit of a lowdown on the house rules. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't like a, this is how you have to act, these are our rules. It's more like, hi, welcome, this is how we like to play. And we like to get people to verbally agree to these rules, to say, yeah, okay, I agree to that. And usually have some kind of interaction. If they're new, we'll usually take them on a tour, actually around the space. We'll have meet and greet people to take them around the space. And it just really makes them feel at home. If you get them within that first 2 minutes to feel like they are at home and totally welcome, and there's this whole community of people here to welcome them, then they just feel safe. You know?
That's true for pansexual parties. We used to never do something like that for the male ones, but it's a different animal.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to completely disagree with Kitten on that one, in that, I help Comfort and Joy a lot, and the thing that I find missing from theirs is the lack of door and greeter, and that I think that...
Greeters, but we don't say the rules.
Yeah, okay, but having a strong door in which the vibe is publicly acknowledged, I think is really important, and that, like, frequently... the vibe is not acknowledged fully at a Comfort and Joy party other than by visual, and there isn't a person who's like, so, this and this, because I don't have to have it because of the physical environment that we're throwing in, and usually doesn't mean, but in an environment like yours, when we throw a party at our own house, it's like, or some of the other that are like private residence space, like it's very important that somebody feels guided and hosted, and I think that it like sets it, and when we found parties at our house that were sex parties and we didn't have a greeter, people treated the house like it was maybe any party, and maybe you would be told, like, actually, you have to take your shirt off, like... Oh, I just wanted to add, I guess we do have these, and we get them across in the RSVP, because sometimes, like, oh, you want to have the flyer that says, this event is happening, but we don't have the address on the flyer, so if it's left on the floor somewhere, we won't get in trouble for the wrong person picking it up, and you have to RSVP through an email or a phone thing, and then you get the rules on the phone message, or you get the rules in the RSVP, thank you for RSVP, and here are the rules, and the address is always, like, buried, hard to find at the very end, so you actually have to read through these are the guidelines. So there are rules, and I don't know, we had a 600-person pride party last year, or like last June, and we had a couple of rules, and I tried to be very real light.
Yeah, I don't like to call them rules either. Yeah. Rules is a horrible word. Yeah, exactly, like how we like to play, like guidelines, like do's and don'ts. But another thing that I wanted to add about tools is to go full hippie on you here. Actually, even though at Kinky Salon and at Club Kinks and at Velvet, at all the events that we throw, we don't actually have like a circle or like a ritual space where you're like sitting down and holding hands or doing an actual guided ritual together, we do have altars in the space. And that's one of the things that I think is really important for the vibe of the space and something that we do give in our training for Kinky Salon to tell people how to really throw a successful sex positive space is to have intention and to honor the masculine and the feminine and the divine in each other through altars. It doesn't have to be a full-on ritual for us. It's just having that intention in the space just really kind of binds everything together.
Whereas we've noticed it kind of having that people relate to actually the sexual intimate ritual. They're sort of socialized around it and feel a degree of comfort and permission, and this is the doorway through which we enter. So that's just a particularly socialized group of people.
So I also think the ritual could be everybody's looking at each other, clapping their hands three times and turning around, and they know that moment has happened, that the party has begun, whatever the ritual it is. The structure of greeter and then door person, and then somebody who takes you around and guides, and then a space that has an eating space that's for social stuff where talking and fun can happen that's not sex, and then spaces that are designed as sex spaces was designed by David Luria and Clark Taylor from the Sexologist Sexual Health Project, and it was a structure that was pushed around the Bay Area in Boston and New York by me and Carol after David and Clark passed. Clark went international with his work. He went through London and through the entire Balkan countries teaching people how to set up these safer sex structures in advance. So these ripples happen, and they go out, and they come back. And it's good to see that the work that we did was basically trying to get people to understand that using condoms, that was our whole goal. It was just having condoms in your space is a really good idea for some people.
And it was sneaky to teach you if you had an orgy to boost your, motivation.
Okay. So I'm a historian. What I like to do is credit where these ideas come from so we all understand that we're not inventing these things. These are people who've studied this before they've gone out and done it, or they've had a lot of experience going to them and they see what works and what doesn't.
And also sex spaces. As Charlotte said, she were here, sex spaces in the early swing clubs. Betty Dotson, our friend in New York, lived in the Bay Area for a while, and she too ran play parties in the 60s and 70s. And what we're talking about today has real antecedents, not just going back to when they closed the bathhouses, but even further back then.
The more recent thing that came up was the Short Bus movie, when Keith Hennessy called me up and said, you have to go see this movie that Justin's decorating the room in, because the sex orgy structure at Short Bus is exactly the same thing that was happening at 848 15 years earlier. And that was kind of remarkable. So this is in some ways a standing wave of stuff that goes on that different people through the years inhabit. We go back to the 1870s and go back to Victoria Woodhull and a group of free love people who were doing pretty much the same thing. And there's no history for it. So that's why one of the reasons we have the center is to maintain that history, to show that we don't have to invent it new because Dianne Feinstein shut everything down.
Although it's fun to call out Dianne Feinstein for that. It's fun.
I know. She also invented lap dancing. It's true.
I want to move. I know that we can talk all night, but there are people who need to get buried in fucking coffin, and how can we possibly stay too long in the way of that? I've got, we've got a mic in Mamie's hand over there, and if there are some more questions, we want to try to answer them. Mamie, go.
I'm really interested in this idea of the temporary autonomous zone, about the temporary spaces, and I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit more to the differences that are probably, I'm presuming, inherent in creating a space for sex that is a temporary space, like you mentioned, Robert, a warehouse.
Squatting.
And squatting in a warehouse, and then one that is permanent. You know, permanent concrete spaces probably have much more resources, much more preparedness, and so how do you make
much more scrutiny.
So what tools are different, and what tools are the same in those two?
That's a good point. I guess since I got the microphone, I was like, who's going to talk? But I think that most of our experiences with sex spaces are temporary autonomous zones. So there are places that are set up like with permanent spaces. Even a lot of the houses that you may have been to that you think of as being like always set up for a sex party actually can secretly be converted right back to a house. And so I think that we don't actually have that much practice creating permanent sex spaces. And I wasn't dissing kinky salon in a way, I really like kinky salon, but permanents can breed stems, especially if you're trying to throw, like, okay, the first of every month is our men's SM party. Well, how many months is it before you have five men coming to the SM party, even if there's 500 a year ago? Is it like, there can be a lack of, like, sort of story arc to a permanent space? And I've run permanent spaces before, and I was able to difference is that your mattresses have like an incredibly short shelf life.
Whoa.
And they become disgusting, and there's like all these weird sort of like maintenance issues that when you're moving a mattress in and out of a truck 200 times, you don't need it because when it's made these right away, you can handle it. But when you're in a permanent space, you're like, did we flip that mattress? When was the last time we flipped that mattress? Oh, great, there's black men underneath that mattress. How long does that last? Should we move all the mattresses? Are we going to clean this entire space? So there's like the drawback there too.
And that answer would be, Yes, that is the time that you clean the entire space, actually, just saying. I want to say something riffing on what Mimi asked too, because what I'm thinking of is the Folsom Street fuck machine booth that we did for 3 or 4 years that was truly an exhibition and voyeuristic space on a public street. Granted, it was colonized by the community, but as you all know who have been to Folsom, there are plenty of rookies, and we were never able to successfully get the people who were voyeurs with the program. The people who were the exhibitionists came into our booth and limited a space where we could interact with them successfully. We were never able to successfully, during the period of time that we did this, teach voyeurs respect to the degree that we believe it needed to be the case, and the amount of beer at Folsom Street probably contributed to that, but also the fact that when you're running around a city, you already think there's you've got a pass because it's a sexualized environment. When it becomes much more explicitly sexualized, it's a different set of rules than when you're running into some place and a door person is greeting you and bringing you into a zone that people have established together. We weren't able to successfully establish the whole street as our zone together, which I think is sort of the next frontier in my thinking about this kind of stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like even if you have a space that's permanently set up, I still feel like every time we create a space together, it does create that temporal autonomous zone, because it's the people that create the temporal autonomous zone, not the place. So I feel like every weekend there's this intense, energetic kind of experience that happens at Mission Control that, you know, it's not, it doesn't happen like that for the rest of the week. I mean, we're not always having orgies.
I mean, quite a lot of the time.
So I'm not sure that it's any different in a lot of ways. I guess temporary autonomous zones, also if you're talking about stuff happening out in public, you've got a lot more X factors to kind of bear in mind, and you don't have the safety of the container. So you're creating a sexually charged environment that doesn't have safety. So I guess you have to be into that as well. Like, that's cool to not be safe, which is cool for a lot of people to not feel safe. That's like, yeah, safety is a state of mind. Thank you, Jordan. Exactly. So I think that I think that the only real difference is that you don't have control over who's in it. Like Carol was saying, you have those extra bystanders.
I guess I also just want to be clear that I always think of the open reasons being temporary autonomous zones also because people live in the house. And when I think of it as like a not temporary autonomous zone, I think of like a dedicated sex club with no live-in staff, like Ayers or the Citadel, where when you come in, if there's not a party happening, you have like sort of stagnant sexual equipment with no life given to them. You know, it's like just a surrender's cross, just a sling, and it's like inanimate. And when people come, to like the animation is what creates the zone, and that's why I think that your house always feels like a temporary autonomous zone, is that you're creating a specific animation for your parties. Yeah. Your party doesn't live there anymore.
Okay, you've got the mic.
Okay, I guess you've all kind of talked a little bit about the sort of pre-screening that goes on, whether it's telling people to invite a couple of people or having some kind of RSVP structure. So is there, like, have any of you guys done anything to sort of, like, guarantee an inclusive environment for people with maybe, like, different kinds of body types or people with disabilities or people who are, like, blind or deaf? I mean, have you guys ever thrown, like, a sex party for blind people, I guess? I mean, I'm just wondering, like, what happens if you try to open that up or cater specifically to those kinds of audiences?
A sighted person giving a sex party for the blind would probably not go very far.
Although there has been a party in town that was in complete darkness.
Darkness falls.
Darkness falls. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kinky salon.
I turned it off. Kinky salon. Kinky salon is a fully inclusive party. We have. We've never turned away anybody for age, size, sexual orientation, gender, we've carried people in wheelchairs up the stairs on many occasions. So the only restriction that we have is attitude. Really. If you have a bad attitude, then you can't get in the door, but that's the only thing. And we've always promoted to our social networks and friends of friends and friends of friends. So it's an open party. It's always been open. We don't have any policies of any discrimination at all.
I think it's a really good question. There's something affirmative about going after the people that you want at your event, and I would chase down black people down the street. I was like, we are going to the next event. And I'd be like, oh, fuck, sexy African-American fighter. And literally went after them and fired them. So I'd be like, okay, it's not going to be all white people here. And I tried to make sure it wasn't all completely beautiful, perfect people either. I'd be like, oh, yeah, you've got a lot of flair around, and you look in fashion. You're going to add some spark. And, you don't have 0% body fat, but you're still invited. But I think it's always good to think of events as magnets for a certain type of vibe and not exclusionary things. Like, we do a magnet event, it's geared towards gay men, but all guests are welcome. As opposed to, oh, you're not a woman, you can't come in here. It's more like, well, if you want to hang out with gay men, we're over there, and you can come and experience that. But we don't want to hear a lot of critique that you don't like gay men.
Initially, the party structures in San Francisco were much more open after the mid-80s and on about who attended. So you go to parties and it would be very mixed gender orientation, very mixed people. And in time, the structure split and started to eutrophy. The cities are getting a bit more conservative about what it will allow. There's more places that do sort of off-site stuff. Like you meet somebody here and you go someplace else. And I think that's part of the reflection of the internet, saying, I'm going to meet you, but we're going to meet here. I won't say Twin Peaks is a bar, but someplace like that where they can meet and then go off. And these clubs are providing some of that service. Queen of Heaven was designed around specifically inclusivity. I'm a disabled person. There are other people around who were on the staff who worked as disabled people, and we're able to provide continuity. And then, as the same rules Polly has, we never, ever turn anybody away for lack of money. And if they can make it to the door, but I will say the door person is, again, very central to this. The person who's at the door, if they are standing in the street and they see somebody walk by and they that person has that snap of the moment in their eyes and they smile and say, want to come inside to an orgy? And they go, uh-huh, and you go, going up. Because that just keeps it, allows that sense of movement to happen in the party and have some fresh meat every now and then. Yes, it's fresh meat. For those of us who've done it for 40 years, it's fresh meat.
I would also say that this expert will feel that the exclusive vibe is not based off the party organizers. It's partly based off, like, how maggots can be super nasty with each other. It's true. Nobody likes that. Maggots can be nasty with each other. One of the things that we did this exercise at the Old Creek Sanctuary, we had everyone do a spiral dance where we look into each other's eyes, which is where, everyone gets things open and we just find each other's eyes. But that doesn't really help bags to, like, lower people that are outside of their body type for this semester for you. The care about themselves does not make you want to sex with them. So we did this secondary experience where it's true. So we covered people's eyes and did a spiral dance where we smelled everyone's armpits. At this point, you know, that had happened for 3 days and there was no dinner, and so you could really get a chance to smell people for a memory. And it was the most inclusive in, like, how bodies couple, because frequently you see, like, in gay orgy, there's several different kinds of body types, but maybe they're not actually mixing up, like, maybe they're all having sex in the same room with the bears with the bears, and the drinks are with the daddies or whatever. And this was a lot of people, myself included, were really surprised by who they were attracted to at the end of it, because the pheromonal pull is so different than the visual pull. And it can also be the most close to a sex party, the pull sometimes when you're lonely, like requesting people get that close without negotiation, but it really only knows I've ever found a fight, like some really exclusive, sort of body fascism that we pull in our sex parties.
People who just said advanced placement sex party. I just want to repeat that phrase because I think it's fucking awesome. Fucking awesome.
Of course.
Thank you, Zach. And I also want to say that I reached out to people who do mostly people of color play parties. There are a couple of organizations intermittently in the Bay Area. I didn't hear back from anyone. Also reached out to Screw Up, which is heavily trans and heavily disability inclusive, and didn't hear back from them either. So I actually tried to build a little more of that discussion in than we built in ourselves to the panel. But
I was really interested in the diversity thing around gender expectation and trainees, because it seems that a lot of times whenever I do drag, putting on a wig and any makeup would mean that, like, I wouldn't get any play and they would look at me and blah blah blah, and it'd be like the kiss of death or anything.
15246.
So I was like, okay, we're gonna change this dynamic. We're gonna mix this up, and we brought in lots of training entertainment and people that would mix it up on stage and off stage,
and now our parties are very mixed. It's like there's circuit boards, there's bohemians, and there's a big contingent of trainees every time. Because we actively built and went after the trainees and said, okay, come to our thing, and entertainment's a big part of it too. Give some people something to look at that's not necessarily a sex thing, that lightens them up. And we always have like some kind of drag queen performer thing, and usually it's kind of saucy, and it lightens the energy, gets people a little bit less serious, and then makes them open-minded to other things. And but it's an intentional thing. We're going to blend the trainees and the muscle boys.
Bette Midler started out in the baths in the 1970s. Yes, she did. This has been going on a long time. I think we maybe have just a room for a question or two, time for a question or two. Are we Bette Youngs? Let's see, in the back.
Did you have another one too, Rose?
Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit about the social contract aspect of this. Personally, I've always really liked the bonobo idea of non-focused, just friendly sexuality. And I also really admire the Human Awareness Institute, that I've learned to love somebody that at the beginning of the weekend I didn't think I would really want to shake their hand, you know. So, could you talk a little bit about how sex parties, partly to combat this idea of, you know, the really hot people pair off and whatever, ways to use the social to bring more of a sharing?
Sharing is caring.
To me, I always think that sex is like the best backdrop to a party. Like, if you're going to have a party, you're going to have some friends over, and you're going to have, you know, chat and be social. But if there's people having sex, like, in the background, it just makes the party so much more active and fun. People are flirty, and it's all like, woo! Like, everyone's all... And there's, you know, there's that heightened energy of sexuality. Even if it's in the back room, and you can't never even see it, even if you never even actually go and peek or get involved, you're still kind of feeling that charged energy coming from the play spaces, and it just increases everyone's playfulness and makes people much more social and friendly and flirty and fun. That's been my experience.
Well, I heard something about beautiful people, and I used to take like the it boys and put a tray in their hands and tell them they had a mission to pass trays to all the wildflowers and to flirt a lot. If they saw someone uncomfortable in the corner, their job was to bring the tray over and be like, hey, and then like to touch them and to try to do something like extra, so to kind of mind the space.
My experience is that it is a particular kind of party, a particular kind of organizers who manage to make an educative enough space for everyone to come in and know how to behave. It was kind of like I was talking about the Folsom space, that we weren't able to put our arms around that big. And sometimes there are people who come in, and my perception of them is that they are so hungry, although that may be a mistaken perception in some cases, but that there are sometimes people who can't behave appropriately. And there's the question of, do they get cut out of the herd, or is there a space to make group orientation, which can sound a little Machiavellian if you push it too far, possible, because every one of these kinds of spaces is self-selected in a particular kind of way. And I think they are still a little too outre culturally for us to have studied up and understood as well as I would like us to have done, although I think we did a good job here tonight, actually, y'all. What are all the elements that go into it? These are complex social structures, even the simple ones. A threesome is a complex social structure. So when you get loads of people, and loads of people who may not have cultural matches of various kinds, it's very interesting indeed.
The only one that I was going to make is that the parties we were having in Boston in, I guess, the 90s, which, as I believe, is truly modeled on your parties.
Yeah, Queen Bellas, essentially.
The most important thing, I think, for creating that sense of mixing and also inclusiveness was the ritualizing of the space, which was something that could become very lighthearted, because you were talking about, you know, educating and an educative experience. And so we would do stuff with sex dolls. And so show things like, you know, if you come and you touch somebody and, you know, and they shrink away, so you do little plays with blow-up dolls and or show, you know, putting a condom on a blow-up doll and saying, you know, like, and you need to put a condom on all of these that you see, whether they're on the blow-up doll or whether they're on a boy or whether they're a dildo. And so there was a sort of funniness that would happen, and people would be laughing and mixing with each other in a way that could cross some of that. But that was not, you know, only gay male space, but in mixed gender, mixed everything space.
Thanks, Rose. Johannes, last word.
Okay. We'll have a sex environment down there pretty soon. It will be very fun. The only problem is you'll have to sign a bench waiver to get in. I'm not sure you have to do it all the time. You will have to sign a bench waiver that reads, if I die, it's not our fault. And it is not.
Thanks, everybody, so much.
That's good for the last word. Come on.
Thanks, everybody. I do want to know if anybody took my hint and put a piece of paper back on the podium in case anybody wants to sign up for these, and I can cruise back tomorrow and pick the piece of paper up and we can and share them with our mailing list.
And really good pianos for Carol Queen.
Oh,
aren't
you nice? Aren't you nice? Aren't you nice? I want to say two things. I did fly in from New York this morning, so if I wasn't quite as incisive with the quality of my questions as you guys expected, I apologize. I blame the jet lag. And people think that I named Queen of Heaven after myself. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's named after the Queen of Heaven. Fuck it. Yeah. I'm very excited to see how the fucking in the coffin goes. I think we're all very interested.
Let's do this. Just in case, are you interested in returning tomorrow to Ars Electronica? It's not here. It will be at Noise Bridge starting 2 o'clock. Tomorrow is the unconference/workshop day. We have a couple of really like quite standard talks tomorrow, but we also have wonderful workshops like creating your own electronic lingerie and stuff like that. It's really, really interesting. So please show up tomorrow at Noise Bridge for a couple of hands-on performances and experiences. Among them, Heather Kelly, who will again present Body Heat, her revolutionary new iPhone application to control the vibrator. It's excellent. And in the evening of tomorrow, around 8 o'clock, we'll move from Noise Bridge around the corner to Mission Comics and Art, a really wonderful, excellent comic book store. And there will be a session of lightning talks. And I would like to invite you to participate, not only watching it, but also like giving a lightning talk. The basic idea is pretty simple. Bring your USB stick with a JPEG or PNG image of one piece of art, an image of an artwork dealing with sex, technology, and science fiction that you really like. We'll put it into the computer, we display it, and you'll have the possibility of 3, 4, 5 minutes of telling why you really think that this piece of art is awesome. And we'll do that as long as people show up with their USB sticks, I guess. Okay. Tomorrow at Mission Comics Night at 8 o'clock, that will happen then. Now we go down to the coffin. Just in case you have a couple of extra bucks, please give them to the guy who looks like a Turkish mafia guy, Günther. A big applause, by the way, for my colleague Günther, who is also... He's always in the back and silent.